Welcome back to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Coming up later this hour, we'll talk with the founders of the new Northern Voyage Film Festival in Brookings. But first, along the 4th and 5th fairways of the Hiawatha Golf Club in Canton is a cemetery where over 100 Native Americans are buried. They'd been patients in the Hiawatha Asylum for Insane Indians, the site of which is now the golf course. The asylum opened in late 1902, and for the next three decades, Native Americans from around the country were housed there. The site is on the National Register of Historic Places, but a newly formed group says the ground around the cemetery is in need of repair, and members of the group are looking for ways to honor the memory of the people who died in the asylum and to remember one of the darker sides of South Dakota history. Reporter Steve Young wrote about the Hiawatha Asylum and those efforts to preserve its history in a series of articles for the Sunday Sioux Falls Argus Leader, and he joins us on the line. Steve, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Carl, thanks for having me.
And if you want to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 800-524-3604. You can also email us at midday@sdpb.org. Well, Steve, in my introduction, I used the word patience to describe the people at the Hiawatha Asylum, but that doesn't seem really to be the right word. Perhaps inmates is better?
I think inmates is a word that gets used by a lot of people, patients, residents. I mean, The research I did, Carl, would suggest that there were, in fact, Native Americans sent there who had mental health issues, but to a larger degree, I think they often were just indigenous people who did not want to accept the white way of life, did not want to be assimilated into white culture, and fought it, and as a result of fighting it, ended up spending a large part of their lives in this institution in Canton.
How many people in total were sent to the asylum?
You know, I don't know that I ever came across an exact figure. I've seen different numbers that range anywhere from, roughly 400, 500, 600, somewhere in there. It seems to me like it was never meant to hold more than about 80 to 100 people at any one time. But, in large part, the people that were sent there very often did not leave there unless they died. So the population they had there was there for quite a bit of the 30 years that the place was open.
Why weren't people ever released?
You know, there are a lot of issues at play in this, Carl, one of which is the administration. The people running the place viewed the Native American race as a savage race, and as such, perhaps in their white European minds, was an inferior race. And so there was a practice of what we call eugenics. They may have been perfectly fine, but the white race didn't want these savages in their minds, quote-unquote, having more children and putting more in defective, less-than-white citizenry into the population. And so they just kept them there, kept them isolated. I think there was a lot of that. To keep the jobs for the people of Canton, they had to have a certain clientele and a certain number of clientele, and I think they just tried to validate their existence by keeping the numbers up as much as they could. And then a lot of the Native Americans there sent letters to their senators, to Congress, to their governors, saying they were fine, asking for help, and just never got those requests answered.
Let's go back to the beginning of the asylum. How did it come to be put in Canton?
You know, there was a senator from Sioux Falls, Richard Pettigrew. The museum's named after him. He was apparently connected with the different reservations, the agents who ran the reservations for the Indian Office, the kind of the Bureau of Indian Affairs at that time, and apparently a number of agents were trying to convince Senator Pettigrew that they had a problem with Native Americans on their reservations who they thought had mental health issues, and they didn't have the facilities to care for them. The white American mental health institutions either did not want or were not capable of handling Native Americans. So the agents lobbied Pettigrew for a facility for Native Americans only. I'm not entirely sure how he selected Canton over Sioux Falls or some other community in this part of the state, but there was another gentleman, a former congressman and former mayor of Canton named O.S. Gifford, who liked what it was that Pettigrew was trying to do and supported it, and I think lobbied him to put it in Canton and said they would have space for it there and that they believed it was kind of a central location for the country. So they settled on Canton, and then that's the way that the Pettigrew lobbied for it in the U.S. Senate.
Now, the Gifford, was he the first superintendent of the asylum?
He was the first superintendent. Had no medical background, no healthcare background. I think he, in large part, had an economic development background. And it was a federal agency. I think as such, it maybe even in those days was under, civil service guidelines, bringing in the best qualified people to work there. And Gifford, for the most part, ignored that and brought brought local citizens in, most of whom had no background in working with mental health issues or the mentally handicapped. So, he provided a lot of jobs. I don't have any doubt that there are people that worked in those jobs who have grandchildren, great-grandchildren living in Canada today who would, speak highly of their ancestors and the work they did, but the fact remains that they were not really trained or qualified to work with mental health patients, if in fact there were many mental health patients there.
Now, O.S. Gifford's replacement was Dr. Harry Hummer. Now he was someone with a background in treating mental illness.
He did have a background in that, and I can't speak to psychiatry today. I know back in that era, according to all the government records, the books and other things that have been written, his idea of treating mental health was a lot of outdoor activities and what they called tonics, whatever tonics were, and just putting people to work. So there wasn't, a lot of mental health treatment per se. It was more of an isolation and trying to teach them white ways, trying to put the white view of psychiatry in play with Native Americans, not understanding their culture. And he was a bit, I guess, also of a conservative sort economically. He was not prone to spending a lot of money for coal to heat the place or if he could save on medicines and things like that. He was known to send money back to Washington, D.C. in the hopes of showing them that they were running a good business and that they weren't wasting the government's money. And unfortunately, in so doing, didn't apparently spend a whole lot of money on the patients themselves.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke, and we're talking with Sioux Falls Argus Leader reporter Steve Young about his recent articles about the Hiawatha Asylum for Insane Indians. It was open in Canton from 1902 to about 1934. You can read Steve Young's articles online at argusleader.com. Steve, you were touching on a little bit about the conditions. What were the conditions at the asylum?
Carl, the conditions were not good, and to be fair, I think in a lot of institutions in the late 1800s, early 1900s, they weren't great. I mean, I've done stories before, for example, on the state hospital in Redfield for the developmentally disabled. I know conditions there 100 years ago were not very good as well, so in any kind of institution like that, whether it was white or Native American or what have you, back in that era, they weren't great. As far as this asylum, they were understaffed. The people would go to eat. They would leave for the night. They would handcuff or shackle people to their beds, to the pipes in the wall. Some people got very little treatment, were left shackled in their rooms for months on end. They had no sanitation system. They used what they called chamber pots when people had to go to the bathroom. Those often sat for days, if not longer, were not dumped out, were not cleaned, and they used coal to heat the facility. The coal dust would get on the floor. The people would go to bed at night, and their sheets would be black, and they, you know, didn't do a very good job of cleaning the sheets, and so it was a very at times unsanitary situation that they were in. They used words like they suffered from paranoia, from it's so socially unconscious now to use the word imbecile, but lots of people were classified as imbeciles, and if they didn't behave themselves or be quiet, they would often put them in straitjackets and leave them in straitjackets for hours and days at a time. So it was fairly inhumane treatment.
Were there any efforts on the part of the families of these people to get them released or to help them in any way?
You know, it's interesting. A lot of them lobbied to have their loved ones sent home, said they would take care of them. Hummer had the final word, and in his mind, if he didn't think that they were cured, again, of whatever it was that he was diagnosing them with, he would not send them back. They would lobby again their congressmen, other people to get their loved ones sent home, and the people in the asylum themselves would write letters asking to be released, and I think eventually what was Hummer's undoing was investigations that came into being because people were being left there for months and years and longer and not being released. And there was three or four fairly significant investigations that went in to look at why that was, why these people weren't being released, what kind of treatment they were getting, what the conditions were like. Eventually they did close it in late 1933, early 1934, I think in large part because of the complaints of the patients, of their families, and what the investigators found.
Did the closing have anything to do with perhaps changing attitudes towards Native Americans?
You know, I didn't come across that in my research. I think the closing had more to do simply with independent investigators who came in and found people shackled to bedposts and heating posts and heating pipes and the dirty sheets, the chamber pots. There were a number of people that committed suicide. There were situations where children were born in the asylum, and as I understand it, in at least one case, Hummer was convinced that because the parents of this child were diagnosed with mental health issues, that this child had to be have the same issues. In fact, he diagnosed the infant soon after it was born as a quote-unquote imbecile, like its parents, and only when the child got to 3 or 4 years old and everybody could see that it was growing up to be a normal, healthy, happy child did he finally release the child to its native reservation down in Arizona. But I think it was behavior like that which ultimately led to the closing of the place.
Were there other asylums for Native Americans?
As far as I can tell, this was the only federal institution in the whole country specifically for Native Americans.
Now, you talked with one man for your articles in the Argus Leader. He's now in his late 80s. He used to visit the asylum. What did he remember about the Hiawatha Asylum in Canton?
You know, he remembered that he was friends with the caretaker's son, and so he would visit there to visit the son. His family would go on the weekends to visit there. I don't really remember the family connection to going there. He talked about walking through the building, seeing a number of women in particular on the floor, not really speaking, He described one woman who had her finger in the ear, her ear the whole time, and that he had seen her multiple times, but she was always in that state, sitting on the floor with her finger in her ear. And I think what he was trying to suggest to me was that he thought, at least his observations, and again, this is a 9 or 10 year old, that those women on the floor had some kind of mental health issue, and probably. Should have been there in his mind. He also knew residents, patients there, who he said were absolutely normal in his mind. In fact, when he would ask them why they were there, they would indicate they were there because they had committed a crime. One of his friends was a gentleman named Willie Day, who told Manfred Hill was this boy's name, and now he's 89. He told Manfred that he'd killed his brother, and that's why he was there. And Manfred said he looked perfectly normal to him, and his assumption was that he wasn't there because of a mental health issue. He was there because he committed a crime. But, you know, I think Manfred believes that there were people that were there that should have been there. I think he also, saw some of the conditions. I don't know that he ever saw anybody shackled to bedposts or pipes or anything like that. But he understands that the treatment back then was not a very humane treatment, even though in his mind there maybe were people there that needed to be there.
How does the history of the Hiawatha Asylum fit within the context of the history of the treatment of Native Americans in South Dakota?
Well, I think if you talk to a lot of Native American people and non-Natives who have studied the history, the period of the 1890s and the decade before and the decade after it was one of right after Wounded Knee, trying to move the Native Americans to the reservation system, trying to teach them to become farmers, trying to teach them to embrace the white culture, and I think a lot of people have suggested to me that the asylum was created under the guise of treating mental health issues among tribal people, but really was another vehicle. Much of the boarding schools were used to send children off and teach them about white culture and to embrace white society and become assimilated. I think a lot of people view the asylum as another tool in that whole assimilation effort, too, especially for those Native Americans who did not embrace efforts on the reservation to assimilate and become part of the white culture, who were viewed as troublemakers, if you will. They basically were told that this is the way that it's going to work here now, and you're either going to join in with it or we're going to send you off to Canton and there, whatever other vehicles they had at that time. But I have no doubt that people that were perfectly sane and mentally healthy were sent there because they just didn't. They chose not to conform to what it was that white society wanted them to conform to.
Steve Young is a reporter for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader, and you can read his stories about the Hiawatha Asylum at the Argus Leader's website, argusleader.com. Steve Young, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us for Dakota Midday.
All right, thank you.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Coming up after a short break, we'll hear about the state's newest film festival.